Hi everyone, you're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Yara, founder of Wild Eye Adventures. Feel free to connect at www.wildeyeadventures.com. Find us on the usual social media platforms. Look for Wild Eye Adventures and wildeye_adventures on Instagram. On this week's show, I am interviewing a man named Tom Gold. Tom is a life coach and bushcraft specialist. He's spent the last 20 years of his life working with groups and individuals who are all facing significant challenges in their lives or wanting to make some significant changes. Tom has helped people clarify their vision, find the confidence, form habits, and live life on their terms. He has an accredited diploma in transformational life coaching, an honours degree in psychology, and he's also a qualified bushcraft instructor. If you would like to reach Tom, you can visit his website at www.tomgoldlifecoach.com. Now, Tom personally doesn't really use social media. Right on, Tom, protect that mental health. So if you do wish to contact Tom, you can reach him via his website or email him at tom@tomgoldlifecoach.com. That's tom@tomgoldlifecoach.com. So on the Environment and Conservation Show, we tend to cover many topics ranging from environment sustainability. We also cover topics in community support, community action, outdoor and environmental education, and wilderness skills. So Tom is a qualified bushcraft instructor, and he's been working in the industry for many years now with many different types of people. Tom is also interested in mentoring people in the outdoors. So this is something that we're going to be discussing during the interview, as well as how outdoor education and environmental awareness can support us all in our modern day lives and ideologies. So thank you very much, Tom Gold, for joining us on UK Health Radio and sharing your energy on the Environment and Conservation Show. Thank you so much for tuning into the show, everyone. I hope you enjoy the interview. Tom, thank you so much for joining me on the Environment and Conservation Show. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks, Yara. Thanks very much for having me on the show. Really appreciate it.
It's lovely to connect with you. Do you mind telling the listeners a little bit about yourself, Tom, and your background, please?
Yeah, sure. My name's Tom Gold. I live in a little village just north of Glasgow. I'm a bushcraft instructor. I'm also a life coach. I've been working with groups and individuals in the outdoors 25 years, possibly. And I'm a massive believer in the benefits of the outdoor environment just to make us feel better. You know, my sort of underlying philosophy is you don't have to know the name of every last creature that crawls or slithers and every last leaf or twig. You only got to be there with the right mindset. It's going to make you feel a lot better.
For sure. I mean, I personally feel amazing when I'm around nature, and I need to go into nature regularly just to feel that balance away from an urban environment. How do you personally feel within yourself, Tom, being around nature and away from the city?
Always better. There's just so many different applications, but one that I've found, you know, as a bushcraft instructor, or just as someone who really loves being in the outdoors and making that environment into a more comfortable, hospitable place, is that the sort of various tasks and things that we have to do that, I mean, gathering natural resources, you know, preparing them for the fire, then cooking a meal, you know, for myself or other people, you know, there's enough going on there to force out all the other things that I might be focused on or worried about, or the anxieties or the sort of pressures of life that they're all waiting for you when you get home. But, you know, the focus required to do some of these things, or the focus required just to sort of sit and be at peace and just admire, you know, where you are, it actually pushes those things out. I don't think there's room for them to coexist, you know, your anxieties and your sort of ability to absorb what's going on around you. So yeah, for me, that's a real big one. And for some of the people that I've worked with too, just, you know, that sense of wonder sometimes, you know, as the sort of the clouds part and the, you know, the sun rays come through into the forest and light the place up. I challenge anyone to still be elbows deep in their anxieties when that happens. You'll find that that moment can really push those out of your consciousness. It's not going to make them go away, but it will give you a much needed break from them. And ask me how I know that. I have some personal experience there, definitely.
Fire is an amazing thing to teach as a bushcraft instructor. I mean, people think it's just, you know, you're just learning to light a fire, but it goes so much deeper than that, Tom. You know, it's teaching you about a tradition that dates back to our ancestry. Now, I see from your bio that you are a bushcraft instructor, you are a life coach. How do you incorporate the outdoors into your work, say, as a life coach, when you bring people into the outdoors?
Yeah, there's a variety of ways of doing that. Firstly, I find that environment, you know, for all the groups that I run, there's always going to come a moment where, you know, we'll light a fire and we'll hang the kettle over it, we'll do coffee and we'll just sit in a circle, and whatever anyone wants to throw in is absolutely fine. Sometimes it's a specific topic to discuss, but if it's one general truism I've discovered about that situation, is that environment, that's that picture of everyone sitting in a circle around a fire, hopefully with a hot drink in their hand, does encourage people to be philosophical and talkative in a way that they might not have been in a traditional clinical setting, a room with white walls with all the chairs in a circle. I've got my own theories on why that is. I think, you know, archaeology tells us that the earliest discovered human campfire site is over a million years old, but we've been doing that ever since. So I think when we get that moment where we're all sitting around the fire, in a sense, we've all kind of come home, if you see what I mean. We have a genetic memory for this format for discussion that still works for us. I've done quite a bit of work with, for example, with, among others, combat veterans who've had some very, very difficult experiences, certainly through their service lives. This environment makes them talkative and thoughtful in a way that, you know, they really haven't been in traditional therapy. Same with some of the mental health groups that I've run for NHS patients, people who've been stubbornly silent in, you know, indoor therapy sessions, find their voice in this environment. I don't take any credit for that personally. I think the place and the setup really does it for them, but it's one heck of a good start when you can actually, you know, create that situation where people feel safe and okay to speak up.
What's interesting is that the human brain, it actually behaves differently scientifically in the outdoors. Neurons that might be dormant, say, you know, stuck in a artificial closed environment, those receptors actually activate in an outdoor environment. So, you know, you'll feel less stressed, less anxious in a natural setting. And they've done tests on patients in hospitals where they've compared to being in an artificial environment to healing with nature around them, and they always heal faster and better, you know. And so it's scientifically proven that nature is good for the human brain. So I'm not surprised you say that. And fire, it's used by so many different cultures around the world for ritual, for ceremony, for celebration. And what do we call it in the outdoors? We call it nature's TV, fire, right?
Bushcraft TV. Yeah,
Bushcraft TV. Right? Because you can just stare at a fire for hours and something happens to you. It's very hypnotizing. It's very calming, you know. And I haven't met not one person around the planet that does not love staring into a fire, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're very much on the same page there. Yeah, I mean, and that goes for people who've never done it before. I've never met anyone who, you know, had that experience for the first time and said, oh, yeah, well, there's an hour of my life I won't get back. You know, you don't need experience to enjoy this. You know, human beings will naturally form a circle around a fire without anyone, you know, showing them where to sit. They'll all naturally look in on it. And even when we're talking, there will always naturally come a moment where everyone goes quiet and they're all just staring in. But you get a sense that they're all in a good place, you know, particularly as the darkness gathers and people watch the sparks sort of spiral up into the trees. You know, it's that moment of silence. It's a real comfortable one. And yeah, you don't have to have had a lifetime of sitting around a fire in this environment to get it. I think human beings, it kind of works for us. So, yeah, I mean, fire and the ability to safely recreate it for yourself and for other people, well, it was a game-changing skill for our ancient ancestors who first discovered it, but it still is now. I think, you know, if you can share that skill with people, so that they can take it away and use it on their own time, you know, something to do with their children or with their partner or, you know, with other folk in their community, then you've shared with them something that's absolutely priceless, useful, or priceless in the same way that, almost the same way that it was when we first sort of stumbled across it, about a million years ago or so.
So you've seen during lockdown, Tom, have you seen people naturally gravitating towards nature in this time of isolation? We've, you know, been disconnected from the natural world in many different ways. And I feel that humans are seeking out to bridge that gap that we have between the natural world. They want to fill that separation. Now, as a bushcraft instructor, what do you suggest for people? Like, how can they spend more time in the outdoors, closer to it? Is there anything they can do besides just going for a walk, say?
Yeah, really good question. Yeah, I mean, that's always the sort of the traditional way of enjoying the outdoors for a family. I can remember my dad dragging us out in all weathers, right, we're all going for a walk. I think, you know, whilst there are some tremendous health and well-being benefits that come from that, and those have been very well advertised, I think particularly if you're going to encourage young people or kids or people who are new to the outdoors, you've got to have something to do when you get there. That trip to the woods or to the lake shore or whatever, it's got to have a purpose, or got to have something additional to it that goes beyond trudging sort of muddy footpaths and getting branches pinging back in your face and just, you know, everyone just can't wait to get back to the car. You know, you can have a bit of a mutiny on your hands. So, yeah, finding, for me, bushcraft is the art of making the outdoors a more comfortable place so we can spend longer there. So there's definitely a few very easy tips and tricks that you can pick up in order to make that happen. You know, you can take a cheap tarpaulin and some string, and you with that, you know, and without any real sort of expertise, you can set up a shelter that's going to keep you and everybody with you dry. So you can actually enjoy watching the rain there, you know, fall in the forest, or watch a sort of thunderstorm roll in from over the city, depending if, you know, if you've got a nice vantage point or viewpoint. If you can safely create a fire and boil some water over it in a cheap camping kettle or even some repurposed soup cans, then you can actually make people warmer and you can prolong the amount of productive time they can spend out there. It becomes something actually enjoyable, and you can do all this with stuff that just fits in your pockets, really, or a small rucksack. The idea of going tooled up like some sort of mountain man frontier explorer from the 19th century, that's just really not necessary. And neither are big knives, camouflage kit, and some of the sort of scary, crazy stuff that sometimes gets associated with bushcraft. It's about making that environment more comfortable so that you and the people that you take with you can actually enjoy it for a little bit longer, that, you know, make a purpose to it that goes beyond bashing the trail for an hour until, you know, you can sort of tick that box and the kids all turn their sort of screens back on and you've got a partial win and but it's not quite the same as, you know, being able to, you know, enjoy that landscape in a way that, you know, you've made it your home, if only for a brief while.
I completely resonate with what you're saying, but at the same time, I'm going to be completely honest. Now, over lockdown, we've seen people go out to these places camping, but it's the way some of these natural environments have been trashed in the process. I've seen article after article from national parks, from places like Wissmann's Wood, where the environment, people have been going and they've been wild camping, but there's no respect towards the environment in which they're spending time in. Now, you and I, we're bushcraft instructors. We are all for, you know, people going out there and enjoying these habitats. But at the same time, something that we valuably teach in bushcraft is leave no trace, right? Now, can we talk a little bit about the concept of leave no trace in bushcraft and how important it is, please, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think firstly, you know, the clue is in the title. You know, for anyone wondering how they should, you know, leave or treat that special place where they've spent the night or spent the day, the whole concept of leave no trace. Yeah, it should be pretty clear what that means.
Yeah, I mean, it's like leaving nature how you found it, basically. All the trash, it makes me sad. We're losing these habitats. And for the UK,
compared to the rest of Europe, we literally have 2% of ancient woodland left in the UK. So it's about respecting these environments when we enjoy them, right?
It is. But I think also at the same time, and some of the problems that you've discussed, you know, from sort of national parks, and you mentioned some places which I'm guessing are local to you. We've had something, you know, the exact same problems here in my part of Scotland. I live in the Loch Lomond and Trossachs National Park. It draws a tremendous number of visitors each year. That might be different this summer, but historically people flood to the Loch shores in summer, like, you know, salmon revisiting the spawning grounds or whatever. And, you know, the vast majority of those people are absolutely charming, and they leave the place the way they have. When you talk to some of them, you find that they've been coming with their families. Some of them are sort of third and fourth generation Glasgow people who regularly come out to the Loch each summer because it's what they did when they were kids. And that's absolutely fantastic. Even on a really busy day, it can be a really nice atmosphere. It's always a small minority of people that, you know, absolutely refuse to take any responsibility. But I think it's really, really important, you know, when we see the fallout of this, there's always a temptation, and I've seen it so many times amongst sort of professionals that work out there, to shake their heads sadly and say, oof, well, I just don't understand it, when they're standing by a sort of smoking crater that was once somebody's campfire that's littered with bottles and cans. Actually, for me, it's very, very easy to understand. Firstly, those people went there for the same reasons that I might, because it's actually scenic. It's a nice place to sit out at night and have a fire, you know. And secondly, it's very easy to understand why they left it that way, because it was easy. It just meant not having to take all those, you know, dirty tins and cans and bottles back in the back of the car. Similarly with the tent, you'll find that the cheap tents that you can buy from...
Yeah, those pop-up ones.
Yeah, they just leave them.
Popping up everywhere, don't they, Tom?
Along with the carry mats, the sleeping bags. It's weird. I've found them many times, just ditched, you know.
And what's up with doggy poop bags hung up in trees as well? I see that a lot, you know. Is it a bird? Is it a squirrel? No, it's a doggy poop bag.
Must be some little magical fairy who comes along at night scooping those up. I'm assuming that's, you know, what people are thinking when they leave them.
Some of them are just honestly forgotten. I believe that they leave them there with good intentions of coming back, but then they probably forget some of them. But I think, yes, leads me on to my next question, Tom. If, like, do you believe that outdoor education is lacking, that it needs to be, say, incorporated in the national curriculum, for example? Do you feel that young people, you know, they crave this type of education?
Well, I don't know if they crave it, Yara, but it's certainly on a number of levels. And I've been fortunate enough to sort of deliver this sort of programming for schools and youth groups. It can be really, really beneficial for them. And yeah, it absolutely speaks to what we were just talking about, is that you can't consistently legislate and make rules and fine people for, you know, leaving a mess. You know, you've got to sort of take a step back, go back a stage and think about educating people in how to look after the place. And I find that whilst that is a longer term approach, because we're talking about, you know, you can be starting very young with it, some of these kids, you know, getting them to the stage where they might actually be old enough to go out there themselves. You want to sort of implant, or not so much implant in their minds, you want to give them some really good reasons why they'd want to clear up, rather than it just being the law. They've got to take some ownership of these places. It belongs to them. Again, I'm talking about sort of Scotland, where we have some different access rights, but our beautiful natural places actually belong to the people of this country because of the rights of access we have. Learning, teaching them, helping them to understand that they need to treat this as if they own it, because they do, I think is a great start point, but it can't start too soon. And I don't think the ends of preventing this sort of antisocial behaviour can be achieved purely through legislation, fining and telling people off. So yes, I do believe, you know, if only for that reason, that this could be a really, really useful addition to the national curriculum. But it also provides, and I've delivered quite a number of these programs, opportunities for, you know, kids, young people, sort of, you know, teenagers who've not succeeded in a traditional academic environment. Perhaps that's just not their thing. The outdoor education thing really provides them, and the sort of the bushcraft outdoor skills thing really provides them with opportunities to succeed that aren't available through traditional classroom teaching. And it's very, very encouraging to see, you know, the progress that they can make when they get the chance to succeed at something and do something really well. I've worked with excluded students and kids who've been actually officially labelled as unteachable. And I don't know if it's a general truism, but these young people seem much, much more capable and competent in this outdoor environment. You know, where it comes to sort of firelighting, using natural resources, building shelters, cooking on fire. These kids are absolutely fantastic at it. And it's a real pleasure to be able to tell them and their teachers and their support staff that they did a great job on that day. It's for a lot of them, it's not something they're used to hearing.
The amount of times, because we've both been in this industry for quite a long time now, and we've seen around the country, around the world, the different behaviorals. Like, there's been so many times before a camp where, say, for example, some teachers or parents or some higher power will warn me about a particular group of children, or to keep an eye on a particular child, say, that might be on the spectrum. Because once you get them in the outdoors, again, brain pattern changes with that environment. So, well, with bushcraft, Tom, for someone who doesn't know so much about bushcraft, right, it's teaching, you know, how to be comfortable out in the wild, skills of the wild. It's learning how to use the nature around you to your advantage and working with nature rather than against it. But at the same time, don't you feel that bushcraft is bringing in different other educations such as geography, history, the environment, culture?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a great way to understand certainly what some of our ancestors who kind of broke in this country had to do just in order to eat and stay dry at night, you know, from the weather. I think that can really put, you know, anybody, but, you know, really our young people in a position where they can intimately understand just how difficult and challenging that must have been, and what sort of people we are descended from who were able to, you know, not just achieve these things, but to thrive at the same time. And I think in just a, you know, a relatively short session, you can put yourself right back there. And I think one of my very favorite things to do in the outdoors is cooking. It's a very inclusive activity. The more people there are, the more there is for everybody to do. And whilst, you know, it's very, very difficult to recreate historical situations, you know, in a completely sort of immersive sense through food, we can eat the exact same stuff that our ancestors did, and we can cook it in the same way and get a real sense of, if only this one aspect of their lives, exactly what it was like, how much, you know, difficulty was involved, how little they wasted, these people who didn't throw anything away. So yeah, there's a tremendous amount just in learning to sort of cook food on a fire that's really going to make people think.
That's the thing about bushcraft, is you can take it down so many different avenues, whether you're into woodworking, whether you're into foraging, whether you're into fire making or food. And there's so much medicine around us that we're unaware of. And that's another teaching that bushcraft brings forth. You know, like, you know, people walk past trees and plants every day without thinking twice, but then when you bring the knowledge of bushcraft into it, I guess it kind of changes your perception of the world. Like, now when I look at a tree, say for a silver birch, I know that that's going to help me with fire, that that's a medicine tree, that that produces a nutritious sap around springtime. You start to look at the world differently, and bringing in that separation that we have with the natural world. How do you feel that bushcraft skills can help create a better connection to the natural world, Tom?
You know, you give a fantastic example there, Yara, in terms of, you know, the silver birch tree. Yeah, you know, its bark is a great source of natural tinder, and it can actually be removed in small pieces without doing any damage to the tree, which is a lovely thing. But learning the different properties of, you know, the trees and plants around us, yeah, that does definitely foster a sort of a deeper connection and understanding, particularly when we're sort of looking for natural resources. You know, we might find that along that, the course of that search, we'll find that certain species do better in certain environments. We'll see that, you know, they behave differently depending on where they're planted, the trees. You know, we can see where the prevailing winds generally are by the way that the trees in a certain area all seem to lean towards one spot. We can see how they grow completely differently if they're in isolation compared to packed in tight. And actually, when they are packed in tight, you know, we've got these tall, skinny trees that can be a really useful natural resource for sort of poles for shelter building or setting up tripods. Yeah, so once we start to explore, you know, the necessities, what we need from that environment, yeah, we do become much more connected to it. But I would also say that through doing this, just as I was sort of alluding to, we also become a little bit better connected to the one we already live in, because, you know, there's nothing like that sense of appreciation of getting home from a sort of a day out on the hills or a day of sort of working hard in a bushcraft camp, just to realize how flipping easy everything is when we get in, hang our coat up, pick up the remote and put Netflix on. You know, that's like, it can give you a great appreciation, you know, not just for the where you've been, but where you are now. You know, this is like, we are so
the things
fortunate.
We take for granted, Tom. Yeah, I reckon it. You know, you mentioned that you love teaching about food in bushcraft. Now, I once had a child that didn't know where bacon came from. You know, I find that young people, they've lost that sense as to where their food's coming from. And when you teach, like, how do you feel personally when you're teaching food? What empowerment do you feel it brings forth with young people?
Yeah, it's a very empowering thing to do, you know, for any group really, because it's not one of those outdoor things that requires great stamina, physical strength, or some sort of, you know, ability to withstand the elements. It's a very inclusive thing, and everyone's always going to be interested. Everyone, you know, however complex you make it, can celebrate in the outcome, which is everyone sitting around enjoying something nice to eat. Everyone can think, yeah, I actually played quite an important part in that. I've also learned something today. But in terms of, yeah, finding out where it comes from, I'll just sort of digress slightly. One of these groups of difficult young people that I worked with, I think there were 15 of them, young people, they were all aged about 15, from a local high school. They'd been deemed as more or less unteachable, and they persuaded me, I was running a different course with them, they persuaded me that, you know, we could go on an overnighter. And long story short, with the school's permission, that's what we did, a semi sort of remote location. And it was great fun, right, up until it started to get dark, and the obvious question, well, Tom, what have you got for us to eat? And I said, oh, I got a special surprise for you guys. I brought 3 raw chickens and a whole bunch of different vegetables, some of which they all managed to correctly identify the potato, but we struggled over one or two of the others. And I said, this is dinner, folks. We're all going to have to work together to make this. I'm glad you asked when you did, because it's getting dark now. It might even be raining in another hour. And it was absolute shock and consternation that it wasn't all ready, locked and loaded to go. Like, we were all going to chow down at that moment. The chickens had to be spitted and placed on on a traditional spit. The fire had to be prepared with embers to cook the chickens, because you can't cook a chicken in flames. The vegetables had to be chopped and wrapped in foil packets and placed again in the embers. And this was a lot of work. And then just on cue, the rain started, and the guys had to put up the big tarpaulin shelter over our site to stop the fire being put out. A massive achievement for a group of people who were deemed to be.
How did they feel? Were they like, were they having fun afterwards, or were they stressing?
They were stressing at first, because, you know, this meal with its raw chickens and raw vegetables looked a long way from being ready or tasty. And I did say, yeah, this is really it, guys, until breakfast tomorrow.
I can imagine their faces, Tom.
You've worked with young people, Yara. You get instant feedback from them. If it's boring, they will tell you. If they're angry, then you'll know about it. You know, if it isn't working out for them,
this is some good life skills coming in their direction. You know, that's what I love about. Yeah, it's me. The world is what you make it in the outdoors, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, that's it. I said, it's the only way it's going to work. I said, yeah, obviously, you know me, I'm here to assist any way I can, but, you know, I'm going to need to hear some suggestions. Anyway, long story short, they really hit one out of the park. You know, it took a while and there was a lot of work and a bit of cussing and arguing. But yeah, we sat down to a delicious dinner that night under the shelter of the big rain tarp that they put up. And there was, yeah, work for everybody to do, prepping firewood for a start. And it was a real treat. I didn't need to tell them they'd done well, but it was nice to tell their support staff and the principal teacher a couple of days later that these guys had been a credit to their school. I was very proud of them. It did involve a bit of a moment of shock, horror. Oh, wow, is this it? They weren't very happy to start with. But yeah, by their own admission, they felt they'd done a really good job. And I was very happy to hear them say that. Much more powerful than me saying it was them recognizing, wow, we actually made all that work. There was very little for me to add to that. I was proud of them. And then, of course, they went completely nuts that night and running, and no one went to bed until 4 a.m.
They all went feral, didn't they? They went feral.
Yeah, I gave up trying to shout them back into their tents, myself and the other staff. But you know what? They'd earned it. So it was all good.
It gives you a sense of empowerment, doesn't it? And it really, these skills bring forth independence, because a lot of the time in our everyday world, like, we're quite dependent. But when you get in the outdoors, that's kind of stripped away. And the masks that we wear on a daily basis in this world, again, when you're in the outdoors, it tends to all dissolve. Do you find that?
Yes, definitely. You know, the outdoor environment is the great leveler. When it rains, we all get wet. When it's cold, we all shiver. When the climb up to a certain point is steep, we're all going to struggle. And when the rain stops and the clouds part and the sun shines, everybody looks towards it so they can feel it on their face. It's one of those human things. We'll all experience it in a very, physically, certainly in a very similar way, and we'll all feel its sort of effect on our mood, from going from tough and gritty to that wonderful moment of, perhaps being at the top of the hill and watching the mist clear to reveal the valley down below. I challenge anyone not to be moved or to, experience that in quite a powerful sense. So, yeah, in that way, yeah, nature will treat us all the same. How we interpret that, how we explain it, it's going to be down to people's individual beliefs and experience. But I think in that sense, yeah, we experience it all the same, and it can really help bring people together to unite them in that common experience, either of, gosh, this is kind of tough, or in that, that sense of wonder when we get to see something really special and everybody comes to a stop and just enjoys that, completely silent moment of appreciation. It's great. And, we've both been there when it's happened, and it's powerful. This is what we do this for.
Definitely, Tom. And I love sharing that feeling with others. I hope that everyone can feel that sense of awe being surrounded by beauty. Tom, are there any other positive messages that you wish to share with the listeners, please?
Yeah, a couple of things. I would say it's been a one heck of a long year for all of us, and it's been difficult, and I would say please don't underestimate the power of the outdoors to make you feel good. So whatever your routine and your schedule is, particularly as the weather improves, if you're working from home or whatever, and the sun comes out, please go out and be in it just for a moment. Let that sort of early springtime feeble warmth that the sun has, work its magic on you. Get out there. If you can, it's definitely going to make you feel better. You don't need an exhaustive skill set. You don't need to have grown up in a creaky little cabin in the woods to do this. Like you were saying yourself, Yara, there are so many sort of massive, well-documented health and well-being benefits just to spending as little as 20 minutes out there, ideally, and here's a really important bit, with your phone switched off or at least set to silent and put in your pocket. So you can appreciate this. Ask yourself some questions about it and just be present for a moment or two. I've condensed a lot into a tiny little bit there, the nuts and bolts of how to do that. But yeah, if you could just manage that, that's going to make all the difference
And how can listeners get in contact with you and connect with you if they wish to reach you, Tom, please?
Well, listeners can contact me through my website. That's tomgoldlifecoach.com, or they can join some of my meetup groups, which are currently online, but we will soon be heading back out into the trees. And there are links to those on the website as well. We regularly hold a session called Coffee in the Forest, which is as simple as it sounds. We head out into the forest in and around, you know, central Scotland, different locations. We'll light a fire, we'll hang the kettle over it, we'll make coffee, and we'll sit around and we'll just talk. These sessions last a couple of hours. There's never a shortage of things people want to say. And yeah, we always have a great time doing just that. We'll also be looking at some outdoor cooking sessions and tutorials and some overnighters this summer, all unfortunately to be confirmed, waiting on a little bit of movement on the restrictions, but that's coming. We've got a lot to look forward to.
I have faith, Tom. I have faith. Thank you so much for joining me on the Environment and Conservation Show and sharing your energy. Thanks very much.
Not at all, Yara. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio and sharing your vision, your ideas and your opinions on the outdoors, on outdoor therapy and outdoor education. If you would like to reach Tom, you can visit his website at www.tomgoldlifecoach.com. I've got you in the outdoors. I'm currently sitting by a lovely relaxing stream, listening to the water flow. I'm surrounded by beautiful green trees. Being in the outdoors really develops young people's imagination, their creativity. It boosts their confidence. Young people on the spectrum, as soon as you get them into the outdoors, young people that might have problems in the classroom, it gives them empowerment.
It's a beautiful day, yeah. I've got no need to worry. It's a beautiful day, yeah.
So I wish to share an experience with you all that happened in the rainforests of Borneo. And that is where my survival really developed. So my guide took me out into the forest and he told me to stare at the forest floor and asked me, Yara, what do you see? Just in this small square patch. And I looked at it and I thought, okay, well, you know, I see mud, leaves, small plants, tiny tree. And he laughed and he said, okay, Yara, let me tell you what I see now. He pointed to the small tree. That right there is a baby banana plant. He pointed to the other plants. You can use the leaves of that plant there, boil it in a tea, and this will cure digestive problems. The root of this other plant, boil that in a tea, it cures headaches. The plant over here, the leaves are like sandpaper. We use it for building, for shaving down wood. I felt the leaf, it indeed felt like sandpaper. He must have identified at least 4 or 5 different plants in this small square patch on the rainforest floor, used for medicine, for consumption, and for building. And this was just in this little, small patch. And then he said, spend a minute, look out into the forest and try to perceive it through my eyes. And something changed at that point. I began to realize the importance of the rainforest. Growing up in the city of London, walk past trees and plants every day. Don't think twice. But once you apply wilderness education, once you apply the knowledge of what that plant or what that tree can do, you start to see things differently. You start to see the trees and the plants as life, as medicine. Who are the masters of survival and bushcraft? It's going to be the indigenous communities that live in the rainforest. They are the ones that have had the knowledge passed down to them from generation to generation by word of mouth. Knowledge of the biodiversity, the wildlife, and the abundant medicinal plants that are found in the rainforest. Plants that the Western world have not even heard of or discovered yet. The indigenous people in the rainforest, they know about these plants. Let's keep spreading that outdoor education and wilderness knowledge to the younger generations.
because we can't ever forget about the woods, the lakes, the mountains, the deserts, the snowy regions of our planet, the rainforests. We need to make time for the natural world and include it in our lives. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you all stay happy, healthy, and stay blessed.